Hi, you're with Truth News Radio Australia, broadcasting to you on the 9th of August 2014. Welcome, folks, to another show. Well, I'll be with you for 2 hours today. In the second hour, I have a guest from the Citizens Electoral Council, Craig Isherwood, coming on. Craig's been on the show a number of times before, and we've had his colleague Eliza Barwick on the show recently. And today, Craig will be talking about defending Australia's economy against the plans to bring in legislation which would allow depositors' funds to be seized in the event of a catastrophic banking collapse. The terminology used for this type of action is bail-in rather than bail-out. Bail-out is the term that is used when taxpayers essentially foot the bill for the collapse of banks, and that's done in a number of ways. Sometimes it's done by raising taxes. Sometimes it's done by sacking a lot of government staff. And it's done through other austerity measures. And this, of course, has happened in a number of countries in Europe. But we've also had another phenomenon, which is now known as the bail-in, whereby it's decided that some depositors' funds will be seized. Now, the way this is actually done is it's quite underhanded. What they do is they transfer the depositors' funds from deposits to shares, and then those shares are floated, and so the value of your deposit will rise or fall depending on the shares. But they do it because they know the shares are going to drop. So you can lose up to 90% of the value of your deposit. And this is done as a measure. It was done in Cyprus to protect the banks. Craig is coming on in the second hour to talk about what the likely scenarios are in Australia and how and why this is being done. So, going to be a very interesting discussion, and I hope you can stay with us for the second hour, because we're going to get right into a lot of very difficult topics and things that are not being aired, things that are not getting any coverage in the mainstream news. And that's why it's extremely important that shows like Truth News Radio Australia really get on top of these subjects. Of course, you know, I can't guarantee you that we are going to give you the most accurate coverage, the best incontrovertible, unimpeachable information. And, you know, we're grasping at straws here ourselves, but it is the best we can do, and we will continue to do that for you. Now, in the first hour of today's show, I want to have a look at an aspect of our society which you might refer to as a prejudice. You might refer to it as simply deluded thinking. But I want to try and understand a little better the level of deluded thinking that we seem to see so rampantly in our society and around the world. And I'm going to talk about a few issues, but I'm going to focus initially on the Gaza-Israel conflict. Okay, and I want to begin by talking a little about Mike Carlton and the furore surrounding his article and the way people responded to it, and ultimately his resignation from the Sydney Morning Herald. And I'll just play to you a clip here from 2UE Justin Smith, and just a roundup of what happened there.
Tell you this, the belting of Mike Carlton is a little odd. Carlton has now resigned from writing for the Sydney Morning Herald. A couple of weeks ago, he wrote a column belting Israel for their attacks on Gaza. It was a passionate column. It was accompanied by an appalling illustration that forced an apology from the Herald, and quite rightly so. But since then, behind the scenes, Carlton has been exchanging emails, tweets and colourful words with readers. And yesterday, the Herald apologised on behalf of Mike Carlton for those words. And they suspended Carlton. He didn't like it, so he has now resigned. That's the new news this morning. No doubt there will be some smiling faces over this and some gentle waving of victory flags. But just hang on there, because it's not a win. The Herald made the decision to publish Carlton over and over for years, and anyone who read his column would know that it is there to stir up people. It is there to stir up debate. He gets paid for his opinion. Carlton was not there to write poems about flowers and kittens. He was doing what he has been doing for years, and he does it because he gets a reaction. And the Herald knows he gets a reaction. That's why they get him to do it. And that's why they pay him. And I think they pay him probably quite well. And many of the people who would have sent emails and tweets to Carlton would know what he's like. They engaged him because they know that they're going to get a response out of him. They know they're going to get a fired up Carlton reaction, and they love it. And here's the little bit of irony that will make you choke. People who would normally talk to you about their love affair with free speech and have been fighting to repeal 18C of the Racial Discrimination Act will be dancing a jig on Carlton's grave over this. So, here's a few things for you. You don't need to read it. The Herald didn't need to publish it. The readers did not need to write to Mike Carlton, and nobody needed to apologise for anything. All they needed to do was disagree, and then, by all means, please, for goodness sake, let's just have the debate.
Yes, well, indeed. Wouldn't it be nice if society actually worked like that? But there's a number of points there to pick up from in what Justin Smith said. Firstly, we don't actually have a society in which people can express opinion without severe repercussions from many different sectors of society if they offend people for any reason. We have a number of vilification laws that cut across different topics, which actually present a huge risk for anyone simply expressing a strong opinion. This can be in relation to Jews, it can be in relation to gay people, it can be in relation to a variety of racial questions. And, of course, you know, these nanny state legislations that have been brought in supposedly to protect us, to protect the poor little person who gets attacked, you know. I mean, there was a story which was huge in the news about a couple of months ago about a lady who went on a racist rant on a train. And I'll actually maybe play some of that for you as well, because it's a bit relevant to our topic today. And the lady who went on the racist rant on a train was eventually convicted, although she wasn't convicted under racial vilification. And a lot of people are angry about that. But it turned out that her actual words weren't quite close enough within the definition of that for her to be convicted. But people are saying, oh, well, she should have been, you know, it should be racial vilification. And of course, if it is racial vilification, that lady could go to jail for a number of years. You know, a good friend of mine has been hauled before the Anti-Discrimination Council in Australia for mentioning a few topics that were brought up on my own show on his in comments on a blog. And because he linked to someone else who had put captions on the links to my show, it's all very convoluted, I know, but because he linked to someone else who had made more extreme statements while linking to my show, he is now being hauled before the Anti-Discrimination Council. Now, in relation to Israel, of course, it's well known that there are lobbyists, that there are huge forces at work within our society to shut down people who have a public voice, who have a large reach, so that they cannot express opinions which will be derogatory towards Israel. So I want to get into that more, but first of all, I'd actually like to read to you a little from Mike Carlton's essay, which I have here. I I assume it's the same one that's being referred to. This is from the 26th of July, 2014. Israel's rank and rotten fruit is being called fascism. Mike Carlton. The images from Gaza are searing, a gallery of death and horror. A dishevelled Palestinian man cries out in agony, his blood-soaked little brother dead in his arms. On a filthy hospital bed, a boy of perhaps 5 or 6 screams for his father, his head and his body lacerated by shrapnel. A teenage girl lies on a torn stretcher, her limbs awry, her face and torso blackened like a burnt steak. Mourners weep over a family of 18 men, women and children laid side by side in bloodied shrouds. 4 boys of a fishing family named Baka, all less than 12 years old, are killed on a beach by rockets from Israeli aircraft. As I write, just over a week after this invasion, the death toll of Palestinians is climbing towards 1,000. Most are civilians, many are children. Assaulting Gaza by land, sea and air, Israel has destroyed homes and reduced entire city blocks to rubble. It has attacked schools, mosques and hospitals. Tens of thousands of people have fled, although there is nowhere safe for them to go in this wretched strip of land, just 40 kilometres long and 10 kilometres wide. There are desperate shortages of food and water, of medical and surgical supplies. In an open letter to US President Barack Obama, Dr. Mads Gilbert, a Norwegian surgeon working at Gaza's Al-Shifa Hospital, writes of the incomprehensible chaos of bodies, sizes, limbs, walking, not walking, breathing, not breathing, bleeding, not bleeding humans. Humans! Ashy grey faces. Oh no, not one more load of tens of maimed and bleeding. We still have lakes of blood on the floor in the emergency room, piles of dripping, blood-soaked bandages to clear out, the cleaners everywhere swiftly shoveling the blood and discarded tissues, hair clothes, cannulas, the leftovers from death all taken away to be prepared again, to be repeated all over. The onslaught is indiscriminate and unrelenting. With but one possible conclusion, Israel is not fighting the terrorists of Hamas. In defiance of the laws of war and the norms of civilized behavior, it is waging its own war of terror on the entire Gaza population of about 1.7 million people. Call it genocide, call it ethnic cleansing. The aim is to kill Arabs. As none other than Malcolm Fraser tweeted this week, "If any other country went to war, killing as many civilians, women and children, it would be named a war crime. But it is not, although the UN is asking the question of both sides." We're going to break here with Truth News Radio Australia. It's great to be with you today. When we come back from break, I'm going to continue on this theme and I've got some more clips to play for you. We'll be right back. Are you getting fed up with all the disinformation, deception, spin, propaganda, half-truths and downright lies in mainstream news? Looking for something different? Visit Truth News Radio Australia, www.truthnews.com.au, and may the truth set you free. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. It's great to have your company today, and I do hope you visit our website sometime, have a look at our podcasts going back many years, And if you like our material and you think it's worthwhile and you think that that we are doing an important job, that we are providing a service that is needed in Australian society and around the world, I invite you to become a subscriber. It's very easy to do. You just go to the website and click on one of the large banners that you'll see on the homepage, and that will take you to the subscribe page where you can put in your email address and a few other details, including your credit card information. And moments later, you will be a subscriber. And if you subscribe for 1 year, we will send you the wonderful, amazing Truth News Australia t-shirt, which is pretty special. And, you know, you're part of an elite little club there if you have one of those t-shirts. So have a think about it. It's a very worthwhile investment of your money, if I may say so myself. Now, returning to our topic for today, which is just sort of delusion and prejudice about world affairs. And, you know, I read to you there from Mike Carlton's passionate little article there that he published in the Sydney Morning Herald, and we'll have that up on the website so you can read it. But it's passionate, but it's factually correct. I mean, he's just presenting the information that is there. It's undisputed that these vast numbers of people are being massacred. I mean, their bodies are being shredded. I've seen so many horrific images. I've seen the most shocking images that I think I've ever seen. I mean, I've seen babies cut in half and all charred, you know, and people holding up the half of their baby. I mean, it's just, it is traumatic. And there's nothing like that coming out of Israel. I know a lot of soldiers have been killed. Well, a lot, you know, 50 or 60 compared to 1,500, right, civilians. And of course, you know, soldiers have been killed. It's a terrible thing. But the we're talking here about children, right? And there's generally no dispute about the fact that children are considered innocent. You know, children are not to be considered combatants in a war. And so Mike Carlton is speaking simple truths about what's going on. And yet there are people who just have this other completely prejudiced, deluded view about it. And one of them is the American celebrity comedian Joan Rivers, who I'm not terribly familiar with, I have to say, but this has been in the news, and I think the little clip I'm going to play to you here is very illustrative. It's very worth playing, very, very worth considering and analysing, because it expresses the prejudice that you are seeing from large numbers of people in Australia. Of course, most of the people in Israel will think this way. Large numbers of people in the Western world will be expressing the views that you hear expressed by this lady. So here we go.
All right, so I'm trying to get celebrity reactions to what's going on with the Palestinians and Israelis right now.
Let me just tell you, if New Jersey were firing rockets into New York, we would wipe them out. I am so bored. If we heard they were digging tunnels from New Jersey to New York, we would get rid of Jersey. So I don't want to hear anymore, oh, we'll do a partial truce. The Palestinians, you cannot throw rockets and expect people not to defend themselves.
What about the civilian casualty rate?
Then don't put your goddamn things in private homes. I'm sorry. Don't you dare put weapon stashes in private homes, and then we say get out. Of course, we're going to do it.
The response normally is where are the civilians supposed to go?
I don't care. They started it. You're all insane.
Okay, let me just comment on that. A couple of points there. You know, she says, don't put your civilians, you know, in the place where you're shooting. And, of course, the guy asking her the questions immediately says, well, where are they supposed to go? And she says, I don't care. But behind that, there is this mountain of propaganda that she is just a mouthpiece for, that is the propaganda talking points that have been put forward by Israel, by our governments, by the large media organizations. Although incredibly, and you'll hear this in the rest of what she has to say, she actually goes on to accuse the media of being biased against Israel, which of course is what they always do. Israel always actually accuses the media of being biased against Israel when in fact the opposite is the truth. There is so much lying going on. People are lying so much that words and language, folks, have become simply putty in the hands of manipulators, of social engineers, to control people. Words and language don't even really refer to an objective reality anymore, except in your mind, you believe in that objective reality, but the objective reality that they refer to seems to have vanished. Anyway, let me just continue and play the rest of this clip from the wonderful Joan Rivers.
They started it. What are you all saying? They started it. The Israelis did not throw their... For months this has been going on.
How do you resolve
it? What are you supposed to do?
How do you resolve it?
How do I know? Because I have been over there. That's how I know. And I wish the world would know. And BBC should be ashamed of themselves. And CNN should be ashamed of themselves. And everybody, stop it already.
You know, like Dwight Howard tweeted, Free Palestine, Take It Back. Selena Gomez tweeted a pro-Gaza.
Oh, Selena Gomez. Oh, yeah, that college grad.
All right, John, thank you.
John, thank you so much.
Well, if Selena said that,
then Rihanna has to take it back.
Tell her, let's see if she can spell Palestinian.
I'll ask her right now.
Love you, John.
Thanks, John.
Okay, so this is not particularly interesting, and obviously this woman is completely ignorant and stupid, but also she represents power. She represents dominance. And you can tell from the tone of her voice, you can feel the dominance there, the I don't care. The I don't care in relation to children being dismembered. I mean, children aren't being dismembered in Israel. It's not happening. So when she says, I don't care, this is the prejudice of the powerful, the prejudice of the colonial mentality, which we have entrenched in Australia very, very, very deeply. And that's an attitude of mine. That's an attitude that that you're better than they are, which many, even intellectuals, have expressed. And actually, there's another clip that I could play to you from Ayn Rand, the celebrated libertarian and author of Atlas Shrugged, and greatly respected by many libertarians. She put forward the view that the Israeli Jews were on a higher plane than the Palestinians, that because they were more civilized, they had a more advanced civilization, and therefore the Palestinians deserved to be dominated, controlled, and basically simply be, you know, the vassals to the superior civilization. And you can see that mentality in what Joan Rivers is saying. But that, of course, is mixed with outright blatant lies, which, of course, are told with great conviction, with great gravitas, because the person telling the lies actually has absorbed the lie to the point that they believe it, even though they've probably never fact-checked it, right? You know, if they were really honest with themselves, they'd say that they'd have to admit that they have no knowledge that this is true. When she says, they started it, they started it. What does that mean? I mean, Israel has been targeting militants in Gaza forever. You know, they never stopped. There were kidnappings that occurred, two different kidnappings, one by Palestinians, one by Israelis. But they started it. But the uber confidence that comes from prejudice and the feeling of entitlement. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back. Don't go. Thank you. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Great to have you company today. And do stay with us for the second hour, because I have a very important guest coming on in the second hour, Craig Isherwood from the Citizens Electoral Council. And he will be talking about the threats to the Australian economy and to citizens' funds, taxpayers' bank deposits, in the event of a massive banking collapse in Australia, and the steps that he and his organisation are taking to try and prevent that. And they're trying to urge protections brought in along the lines of what is known as the Glass-Steagall Act, which was brought in the 1930s after the Great Depression, to prevent commercial banks from using depositors' funds for speculative banking, including things like derivative trades. So that's going to be a really interesting discussion in hour two. Now, let me just return to our topic for today, which is this this question of rank prejudice. I want to actually play to you a clip from Ayn Rand, and this is actually from 1979, and it's from the Donoghue show, the television show Donoghue. It's quite an eye-opener, and a lot of people I know like Ayn Rand's work, and they like her philosophy, and they certainly like some of the principles that she espoused. But some of the principles she espouses are pretty shocking, to say the least. Let me just play it for you, and you can make up your own mind. Here we have Ayn Rand answering a question about Israel and the Middle East from 1979.
I'd like to know your opinion on the United States' foreign policy and what is happening in the Middle East right now.
Right now, I'm not sure we know what's happening. I think that the United States foreign policy has been disgraceful for years. For decades, I would say roughly since the New Deal, and in part even before that. But if you mean whose side should one be on, Israel or the Arabs, I would certainly say Israel, because it's the advanced, technological, civilized country amidst a group of almost totally primitive savages who have not changed for years, and who are racist, and who resent Israel because it's bringing industry and intelligence and modern technology into their stagnation.
Your philosophy of objectivism.
That's right.
I just have one point that I think should be made, Ms. Rand, with time fleeting here. Your characterization of the situation in the Middle East came down rather gratuitously and in a very angry way on the Arabs, and without discussing the merits of either side in a most complicated and painful collision of cultures and peoples in our world. Why couldn't the men, the millions of men, women, and children who are Arab and who find themselves in this desperate conflict and look around wondering where peace will be, why can't they be angry with you for your characterization of them, your slap at them, your roundhouse criticism of them, when you don't seem to be able to tolerate a questioner who suggests that she disagrees with you? Characterization is, you do not accept any criticism unless you level it.
No, I don't resort to terrorism. I don't go around murdering my opponents, innocent women and children. That is what I have against the Arabs. That takes the conflict out of the sphere of civilized conflict and makes it murderous. And anyone, private citizens, who resort to force is a monster. And that's what makes me...
Isn't that incredible that that this lady, who's obviously highly intelligent, celebrated, a writer, a novelist, can talk so deceitfully or stupidly, as the case may be? I'm not sure whether she's actually believing what she's saying there. She's saying that Israel doesn't engage in terrorism. She says, I don't, but she's referring to Israel. She's referring to one side in this conflict. She's implying that only the Arabs resort to terrorism, only the Arabs resort to force. It's just an incredible, blatant, bald-faced lie that's just so ridiculous, but it's so common in discourse, and it makes it impossible to have a conversation, doesn't it? I mean, you know, a few facts we might give to Ms. Rand. Zionists bombed the King David Hotel in 1948 and killed a lot of people in that attack. Zionists bombed the King David Hotel. I mean, this is forgotten. This is hardly ever even mentioned. That was a terrorist act. Zionists engaged in ethnic cleansing of Palestine by the use of force. It may not have been quite as extreme as the Nazis' invasion of the Soviet Union, but it was forceful. It was very, very forceful. And Israel, you know, in the Six-Day War, Israel engaged in massive military aggression all over the Middle East. And Israel tried to sink a U.S. Navy communications ship, the Liberty. It just, you know, goes on and on and on, the list of examples of how extremely violent and aggressive and warlike the state of Israel is. And yet the meme that's put forward by these people who are all puffed up with their sense that they are right, that might is right, that strength is right in itself, or as George Orwell might have said, ignorance is strength. You know, the ignorance that gives you strength to be arrogant. That's the type of ignorance that is strength. And of course, the underlying view that there are superior races and inferior races. She calls them savages. This, my friends, this is Nazi ideology. This is Nazi eugenics. This is racialist philosophy coming from someone espousing the cause of Israel and the Jews. But we see it all the time. It's constant. And it's very important to understand the principle here. And this principle actually derives from some much more ancient sources. Because in the classical world, the argument was used by philosophers who supported the Roman civilization and the Greek civilizations that the peoples who they conquered and pushed into slavery deserved that because they were an inferior race, they were savages, and they needed to be managed. Now, where have I heard that before? Of course, I've heard it in Australia. This is how the conquering of Australia was justified, and the dispossession of the native indigenous people of their lands in Australia was justified. Well, they're just primitive savages. We have to bring civilization to them. You know, they're lucky that we are giving them civilization, and they should just shut up and take it because it's actually a good thing for them. And, you know, if we have to kill quite a few of them, or if a lot of them die off as a result of being, you know, pushed into marginal habitats, who cares? You know, it's like, I don't care. But it's this incredibly inflated sense of power and importance that comes from people who are psychologically identified with the ruling power elites of their own civilization. So that is just a roundup there of some interesting nuggets for consideration. When we come back from the break, I want to talk a little bit about Vladimir Putin and the relationship between Australia and Russia, because there's some incredible prejudice there. Wow. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Well, moving on to another topic now, I want to talk a little bit about Russia and Australia. I've got an article here from the ABC. Russia bans food imports from Australia, US and EU, over sanctions. Julie Bishop disappointed by Russian retaliation. Foreign Minister Julie Bishop says it is disappointing Russia has retaliated over Australian sanctions imposed over the crisis in Ukraine, and she has promised to assist affected Australian farmers. Russia has announced a ban on most food imports from a range of Western nations, including Australia, in response to sanctions imposed on Moscow. Meanwhile, NATO Secretary-General Anders Fogh Rasmussen has called on Russia to step back from the brink of war by pulling its troops back from the Ukrainian border. In a statement, Ms. Bishop criticized Russia's move and said it should have done more to disarm the separatists in Ukraine. Now, I want to play to you a clip here from ABC Radio talking about this topic. Here we go.
Russia has banned imports of most foods from the West in retaliation for sanctions imposed for its role in the Ukraine conflict. The tit-for-tat sanctions will last a year and are targeted mainly at the United States and the European Union. But Vladimir Putin is also hitting back at smaller players, including Australia, Canada and Norway. With more, I'm joined by our business editor, Peter Ryan. Peter, are we seeing signs of a serious escalation in Russia's deteriorating relations with the West here?
Well, Michael, for now, the one-year ban on imports announced overnight is largely symbolic. It's really what happens next that matters. On the one hand, Russia's decision to ban food imports is probably designed to help its own agricultural industry, which over the years has been hurt by cheap imports from the European Union and the United States. But on the other hand, some products that are common on Russian supermarket shelves could start disappearing at some point. The big ones are imports of chicken, pork, beef and dairy products, and of course fruit and vegetables. Now, many Russians are veterans of the Cold War when food queues were common, but nothing like that is expected for now, especially as Vladimir Putin is well aware of his high popularity and the risks that go with that. But things could ratchet up if Russia decides to limit its gas exports to the EU, a dim prospect for homes and industry, especially as Europe heads into the winter.
Obviously, Australia is now a target for Russia in some senses. What could be the fallout here?
Well, the Australian government, Michael, already had a range of targeted sanctions in place in relation to the Ukraine conflict, such as travel bans, and that was well before the downing of MH17. So Australia was never going to be immune from any Russian retaliation. The Agriculture Minister, Barnaby Joyce, says he's disappointed at Russia's action, but he told News Radio this morning that the Australian government will do what it can to minimise any impact on Australian producers.
The Australian people have a right to make a statement about what they see as an action that is wrong, and Mr. Medvedev has a different view, and that's his right, and he has a responsibility to the Russian people, and we have a responsibility to the Australian people, and I know that this is something that is going to cause a bit of hardship in the country for rural producers, but we will try our very best to work around it and find alternate markets.
The Agriculture Minister, Barnaby Joyce. Well, Peter, in reality, this is likely to hurt Russia more than Australia, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that's right. In global terms, Russia imports more than $9 billion worth of agricultural goods per year. Australia accounts for just over a tenth of that, so not insignificant. But economist Tim Harcourt from the University of New South Wales and the former chief economist at Austrade says that doesn't mean ordinary Russians won't be hurt.
You know, the total trade to Russia is 1.8 billion, so we're talking in very small millions here. If anything happens,
All right, I think that's enough of that. Not really getting much analysis, are we? We're not really getting any attempt to look at the problem, the underlying problem. The ABC presents itself as being an unbiased news source, and they have a charter which requires them to provide balance. But of course, in practice, they only provide balance when they choose to, and the balance is The balance is based on rules that they determine, which may have little to do with what the rest of the people in the world think. Most of the world doesn't agree with these idiotic sanctions against Russia. There are many analysts, and I've seen a few pop up on TV that on TV stations such as Channel News Asia, which are not quite as heavily controlled by the propaganda arms of the Western powers, stating very, very clearly and very bluntly that these sanctions against Russia are stupid, are pointless, and really just damaging. The people who are at fault here are the leaders of the West. You know, it's very, very clear that it is an aggressive posturing led by the US and followed by all the little vassal states of the American empire. I mean, it's just very hard to find anyone even asking that question anywhere in the media. I'm just reading to you here from the headlines of a Google News search. Australian farmers seek alternative markets. New Zealand could take a hit from Russia's import bans. Australian farmers concerned with Russia's import ban. There's no analysis of what the Ruskies can't live without. I mean, hey, hang on a second. You know, is this North Korea? I mean, do we basically just echo the policies of the bureaucrats who work in Canberra in the media? Well, it appears that's what we do. Okay, let me just play to you a clip from news.com.au, and I've got an article up here titled "Russian President Vladimir Putin Bans Import of Almost All Australian Foods But Allows In Alcohol Products."
Vladimir Putin isn't one for diplomacy. He's been prepared to stare down his international opponents in the past, but with this tragedy, it's different. Now, the West is seeking to strengthen existing economic sanctions against Russia, but how will that work?
Well, current sanctions prevent targeted individuals from travelling to a particular nation or doing business with that nation. When targeted sanctions were introduced during the initial Crimean conflict in March, this is what happened to the Russian currency and their stock market. Billionaire friends of Vladimir Putin also had their money frozen in foreign banks and took a huge hit to their wealth. The US extended sanctions to include Russian companies before MH17 was shot down, and the EU is now considering a similar stance. There has also been fresh talk of targeting entire industries. This would significantly impact the Russian economy. Now, Russia is the largest supplier of gas and oil in Europe, and they've been happy to use this to their advantage when it comes to strong-arming their European neighbours. It's one of the reasons why there was so little pushback when Crimea was taken away from the Ukraine. That conflict has left Russia far weaker than it has been for some time. Its GDP growth has collapsed over the past 24 months, now sitting...
Okay, well, as you can see, all the commentary here is just about, oh, you know, is it going to hurt us? Is it going to hurt Russia? They just continually avoid the elephant in the room of actually talking about the morality of what's going on, or even understanding the nature of this war that is now brewing between Russia and the West. But it's prejudice that is so deep, it is so built into the fabric of the way people think that it's almost invisible. It's just like you look out the window and it's a sunshining day, and you say it's raining. You know, the sun's shining and you say it's raining and you just carry on that way. I know that our listeners to this show are not in that Orwellian bubble. I know that. But, folks, so many other people are. So many of the people that you work shoulder to shoulder with every day are actually living in that bubble, because they're still taking their cues from the media. And you can no longer fully blame it on the TV, because people do have alternatives. It's not like in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s when there was only the TV, you know, and everyone had to come home and turn on the evening news and get one source of information. There are many sources of information now. But unfortunately, people are still programmed to tune in, to listen to, in their psychological headspace, to tune in to listen to the sanctioned view that some conditioning inside them tells them is the correct view of reality. And these are the people we have to reach, folks. You know, I mean, we can play around on the edges and we can get a few people understanding a few points here and there. But while there's this vast bulk of people who are going to be sucked in by the propaganda about Russia, we really have no hope of making any progress. So that's why shows such as this, I believe, are incredibly important. But we have to try and make it reach more people. So if you're able to, how about this? How about you buy a subscription to Truth News Radio Australia for one of your colleagues where you work? As a gift, make it a gift subscription. How about you subscribe to our show? We'll mail out you the DVD with some of our great shows on it, and you can make copies of that and hand that out to some of the people at work. Just a thought. After the break, I'm coming back with Craig Isherwood from the Citizens Electoral Council. We're going to be getting into Australia's bail-in threats and what we can do to stop it. So it's going to be a really interesting discussion in Hour 2, coming up right after the break.